This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand.
See live off the record with Chivago Live is brought to you by John West Shoes and Royal Star Shines.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Monday afternoon, the Monday before majority rule holiday in the Bahamas. That'll be tomorrow. So we just came off a Christmas holiday, Boxing Day holiday, New Year's Day holiday, and now we're going to have a majority rule day holiday. So you're getting a lot of holidays, Bahamians. If you want to give us a call today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. Or you can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So now we are 9 days into 2023. 9 days. That's still a new year, relatively new year. And it seems like much is quiet on the home front so far. But I do have some things I want to mention today. I didn't take them up on Friday because, you know, I don't like to break that groove we have on Friday where we kind of take a break from all of these hard issues and try to calm things down a bit. But there were some issues that arose the days before that, certainly the day before that, that made me want to say some things. And so I thought I would take up some of them today. All right. Now, you will recall that I spoke about the Ministry of Finance and the central bank's transaction that seemed to raise some issues about the legality of what was done. In other words, that the Ministry of Finance and the central bank had arrived at a memorandum of understanding that the government would be able to secure some funding in the name of special drawing rights from the IMF, recognizing that, in fact, there wasn't a legal basis for that to happen, and therefore the government undertook to pass a law that would amend the law to allow that to take place legally. Now, the basis of the memorandum, including a provision that the government of the Bahamas would amend the Central Bank Act to permit that transaction to occur, was the fact that the Central Banks Act provides that the government could only provide monies to the government by way of loans. It's the only way. There's no other way that the central bank could provide monies to the government other than by loans. It can indirectly or directly advance money to the government. Okay? That's the law. And so we said, as the leader of the opposition pointed out, that this was probably so. In point of fact, the government, according to the central bank and the financial secretary, began to withdraw monies against these SDRs from the central bank. And the law had not been changed. And so the question was raised, what was the legal basis for this to happen? Right? What was the grounds on which this was permitted to happen? And so that debate raged. In the middle of that debate, on Thursday last, I believe it was.
The Ministry of Finance
issued a press release in which it said that journalists were purporting that the government either borrowed money or was printing money, borrowed money from the central bank, or was printing money. And that this was untrue, is what I read in the press release. That the Ministry of Finance said that any suggestion that the Ministry of Finance was either borrowing money from the central bank or printing money was untrue. Now, where I became confused was the fact that the financial secretary conceded in a press statement that the government had begun to draw down on this $233 million SDR. Now, as you will recall, I told you all, SDRs are nothing to draw down on per se, because SDR is not money, it's not currency. SDRs are really an accounting instrument or asset created by the IMF that you can use to get money. But it is not itself money. So there's no account you're going to dip into that's called SDRs, because you can, as I indicated, to try to help you understand it clearly, you could not use an SDR to buy peppermint. SDRs can be traded among countries of the IMF for currency. It can be traded with the IMF for currency, to borrow currency, but it is not itself currency. And so there is no way for the government to draw down. The central bank would have to, in point of fact, have traded in some of the SDRs, which are a part of its external reserves, for cash, and then one would lend the cash to the government. And it could only lend the cash to the government. So here is where I am confused, and perhaps the Ministry of Finance can clarify the matter for us. Is it true that the Ministry of Finance, the government of the Bahamas, received funds from the central bank? Is that true at any point in last year? Funds connected in one way or the other to the general allocation of special reserves, special drawing rights made by the IMF in 2021. So is that true? Let me give you the question again, in case you're writing it down and you want to know. Did the government of the Bahamas, it would have to have been through the Ministry of Finance, receive any funds from the central bank in connection with the memorandum of understanding signed between the Ministry of Finance and the central bank connected to the general allocation of special drawing rights made in 2021 by the IMF? Did the Ministry of Finance receive any such funds? If the Ministry of Finance received such funds from the central bank, were those funds loans? Was it a loan? Was it a part of a loan? And if it was not a part of the loan, a loan, how was the funds given to the government by the central bank? If it was a loan, was it paid back in 91 days as the law requires? And what was the rate? Was it the prevailing market rate? That's really the question. Because the Ministry of Finance says it wasn't a loan. So if it wasn't a loan, wasn't borrowed money, how do you get money from the central bank? If the Central Banks Act only provides for the central bank to lend to the government on market rates for 91 days. And if the central bank didn't give you a loan, why is the central bank even concerned or interested in a change in its law to make what was done in compliance with the law? That's the basic question. That's really, I mean, see, as a matter of governance, this is not a corruption issue, right? I mean, this is not to, you know, when we think of corruption as in someone trying to do something nefarious behind your back and sneak something in, etc., that's not what this is, because this was all a part of a memorandum of understanding signed between the government and the central bank. This was something that the central bank made known through its own reporting and so forth. And so on. If it wanted to hide the thing, it would not have printed what it printed and all that kind of stuff. So maybe not that, but this is something that represents a breach of law. It does. It does represent, and the, you know, whether you want to call that an abuse of power or something else, I don't. That's really up to somebody to characterize. But this is not this, as the leader of the opposition said, this is not how things ought to happen, right? So, you know. And once it was discovered, and then this debate is happening, you would want and expect that you would get information that is consistent with the facts. And so that's really what I was alarmed about when I saw what was written in the release. And so, you know, I'm still confused. I'm still not yet clear on what this movement of money between the central bank and the government, what was the nature of it, and how, in fact, it complies with the law. I'm not so clear. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid to take a step.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Olaim, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon, the Monday before majority rule. We talk about majority rule in not too long from now. Just a couple more issues I wanted to speak of. So again, you know, we'll see what clarity might be provided over this transaction between the central bank and the government. And you know, the Central Bank of the Bahamas is one of the most effective regulators in the Bahamas and one of the most disciplined institutions of state that I know. Very disciplined about this. About its conduct, about its regulatory conduct, about its relationship with the government. Really, really exceptional in that regard. Very competent set of professionals and so forth. So clearly the central bank has found itself in an unusual circumstance when it comes to this particular transaction. And no doubt in my mind, the central bank to the governor wanted to be facilitative to the government and would have maybe expected more efficient approach to amending the law to ensure that this wasn't an outstanding issue, you know. But that did not happen. Now here's the other thing: is the government now still drawing monies from the central bank on the basis of this MOU? Is it still? Or it got the money, it got and decided no more until X, Y, and Z. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Hi, Shivago, how are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
I'm wonderfully well. It's Don King. I haven't spoken to you in a number of years.
And yeah, it's been a while.
I was listening to your show as long as I'm in school, you know?
Okay. Appreciate you listening.
Listen, what I wanted to find out, I missed some of it.
Okay.
The central bank issue with the special drawing rights. I remember way back in the day, they tied into so many baskets of currencies, blah, blah, ray, ray. But it's
right.
Clear as if some things have evolved. I understand people now accept them as payment.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The drawing rights are nothing that is handled by anyone outside of the member countries of the central bank, the IMF itself, and some development banks and special holders. But no one handled that. SDRs cannot be put in somebody's pocket and moved around a cent anywhere on planet Earth.
Definitely not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying okay. that there are 15 platforms that facilitate the trade for debt payment.
No. That's absolutely untrue.
That's what I'm reading.
Yeah, reading it where? So,
four of them? No, you couldn't do it. It's not 25. It's 20 for the first one, 5 each additional, plus 2. Sorry about that. What I'm getting is some different information from what you're saying.
I
wanted to ask you. You talked about the law and it not being something that's corrupt. And whilst we do know that there's some expertise in our service, but what I find, I think, a little bit disingenuous, and not from you, definitely not from you, is somebody last week talked about if somebody was caught with an example, they would have to face the full, brunt of the law, et cetera, right?
Right.
When the fabric is being damaged, the moral and ethical fabric that helps to constitute what we know as law, even though governments can go back and retroactively amend these things, they did so in gaming. I thought that administration put a curse on the country, by the way, when they did that because people voted for a national lottery. But when they do these things, the very essence, the essence of what we call law, is affected, and so
I agree. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100% that is true.
I don't want to overdo it. But there was another issue, if I remember correctly, that involved some 250 million from the IMF and emergency funding, and there were some, I think, discrepancies that came about when maybe a desk review was being done. And something was not in place.
Yeah, there wasn't a discrepancy. That was the 2020 loan from the IMF against the Bahamas' existing SDRs at the time. It wasn't a discrepancy, but what was found was that the terms under that loan required a full disclosure of all of the recipients of funds or contracts under that funding facility, and that they had not yet made that disclosure. And then the Attorney General at the time was arguing that they hadn't done so because the law did not permit them to disclose those people's names as such. So they had to make some amendment to the law or something of that nature. That was what
legislation at the time that required disclosure.
Yeah, exactly right.
And so because there was no compelling legislation at the time, one could not argue fraud. That would be a long stretch, eh? Because if you
know, fraud would never have been the issue, because fraud is a question of knowingly using funds for purposes not in compliance with the conditions of those funds being issued. That was never the issue.
Not so much the funds in this instance as knowing that you wish to obtain by fraud. See,
No. That has nothing to do with the issue at all. Okay. That has nothing to do with it. If you bid on a contract from the government and the government gives you a contract, why would fraud be an issue?
Because you knew there was no compelling legislation and then you had to come back.
No, that has nothing to do with it, man. If you don't have any legislation requiring a thing, then there's no legislation requiring a thing. And if there's no legislation, there's no prohibition.
Fair enough.
All right.
I think you answered my concerns.
Okay, my friend. Take care, man. All the best. Yeah, I did want to know just for his sake, and I think he's right, because somebody else pointed this out last week. When the government appears to breach the law without consequence, it undermines every other area where people feel the law has been breached. That's why even scripture says where you break one law, you've broken all laws, because you've broken the law. The law is a cohesive instrument made up of subcategories of items, but the law itself. That's why we say the law of the land, right? It's because it's all the law of land is all those things. And so to have broken the one is to have broken all. So you are a lawbreaker when you break the law, which practically every single one of us are, right? Whether you run the red light or something of that nature. Now, are you a committed and dedicated lawbreaker? Is it your intent to see every law and any law, and no matter what some advantages there is to you to break the law, you're going to do it? Yeah, most of us would not describe ourselves as such. But it does undermine people's perception of the integrity of the legal system and our commitment to it when it is perceived that the government can reach the law with impunity. The fact, though, is that there are laws that can be breached that have no consequences attached to them in the law. The consequence is what he said, the way people perceive you, the way people perceive your system, et cetera. But there are laws that do not prescribe any consequences for the breach. Some of them having to do with the government. Not many, but there are some, right? So if you look at the Central Banks Act in Article 21 of the Act, where it talks about what the central bank can and cannot do, there are no prescriptions for what to do when that law is breached. None. So you can't say somebody is getting prescribed anything. And who made the law? The lawmakers made the law, right? The sovereign parliament made the law. And so long as the parliament makes a law that doesn't contradict the constitution, the sovereign parliament is okay. And it's okay. You might like it. I might like it. But that's the law. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Relang, your host. We're going to take a break. Pay our respects to our wonderful sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody. Everybody. Come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabar Golang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers to do so are as follows: 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can text us at 422-4796, so you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Nassau, John West is here to put shoes on your feet. We've got your family's feet covered. Asian. Check out the variety of women's sandals and slippers, heels and working shoes, men's sneakers and safety boots available now. And kids, we didn't forget you. Check out our boys' boat shoes, girls' sandals, and school shoes. Now open in the Carmichael City Shopping Center behind Wendy's. Telephone number 242-820-9715. Let us put shoes on your feet. Okay, so this text says, Happy New Year. Informative show as usual. I have a question regarding legislation. The government currently has a draft bill with regard to climate credit. Draft bill states that the government will own all carbon credits. My question is, given that the bill has not been enacted, can businesses trade carbon credits now without ramification? Yes. To the extent that you can somehow instrumentalize, collateralize, make tangible for trading, digitize carbon credits. Yeah, if somebody's willing to buy it from you or trade it with you, yeah, you could do it without any consequence, because there is no law governing it at the moment. So yes, you can. As long as the law does not prohibit a thing, as it don't prohibit a thing, there's no prohibition about the thing, right? Now, you have to know the law well enough to know somebody can't read into this law and that law and then the Constitution and say, oh, yeah, you're in breach. But that's what the courts are for. But if the law is not expressly saying you cannot do, then it is also by implication saying if you do it, you do not violate the law. Okay? Now, what you have to be careful of is where they sometimes get you is transacting it. So let me give you an example. To trade carbon credits is to participate perhaps in capital investment, foreign investment, right? That may be something. And so you then have to check to see if what you're doing is complying with the regulations on the exchange control, right? So you have to see that too. So you don't know what the government's, what the state of affairs is now is that as it currently stands, all carbon credits are not owned by the government. That's the state of affairs today. So it is possible then by some means to have other owners of the carbon credit, like private holders of carbon credit. By some means that is possible. Now, because the law does not prohibit it and does not make all the ownership belonging to the government. So I also saw in the Nassau Guardian where the chairman of the National Insurance Board is pleading with the government to give NIB a rate hike. The chairman, according to an article in the Nassau Guardian written by Candia Daines, board urges NIB to give a rate hike. And she writes, the board of the National Insurance Board has written the government recommending that it move ahead with a NIB rate increase of between 0.75 percentage point and 1.5 percentage point to begin to save the fund from depletion in 2028, as was projected in the latest actuarial review completed a year ago. And so the rate now is 9.9, like, and all things are in. And they are saying to the government that they should increase the rate between to as low as 10.65% and as high as 11.4%. Okay, as low as if my math is correct on the 9.9. as low as 10.65%. So if you are now paying, and you pay, we pay basically half of that. So we pay but 3.8%. So if you're paying on your $400 now $15.20 a week, if you get $400 a week and you pay $15.20, what they're saying is that they want you now to pay hold on, I'm gonna do the calculation for you. So you're paying now your 3.8%. They now want you to pay on your $400, $31.52. I'm sure that's right. But anyway, that's a lot. That's a big jump. I don't think it's that much, but it could be. In any event, and that's at the low end, the board is pleading to the government to give this rate increase, right? Now, I have told you all before, you could cash, take this money to the bank and cash it. There is no question that your NIB is going up. Believe that, right? It is going up. You are going to pay more in NIB on your NIB rate. It is going to happen. It has to happen. The government is not going to permit NIB to fail. It's not going to permit it. It could stall it. The only thing that stalling is going to do is result in stalling is going to result in more drastic measures happening when, in fact, the rate is increased. But you could believe the rate is going to be increased. So on the low end right now, you're paying 15.20. If percentage point rate increase or 0.75 is kicked in, you would pay $18.92, right? So basically, you pay like $3.72 difference. Would you want NIB to fail for $3.72 extra a week from you? Would you want to do that? Seriously? I don't know. Anybody, tell me. But you want NIB to fail so you don't have to pay an extra $3.72? We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, Shivago. Good afternoon. Happy New Year to you.
But Happy New Year, my friend. But before you say anything, though, answer my mind. Would you want NIB to fail so you don't have to pay an extra $3.72 a month, maybe even $5? Definitely. A week?
Definitely not, because too many people right now, especially close to retirement age, cannot afford for NIB to collapse and all of us not to receive our pensions as many would expect would be coming right now.
Let's be real, man. I mean, like let's would say, Shivago, I want to pay more than that. $6 more a week, $7 more a week, $8 more a week, $10 more a week. 4 weeks in a, it's only 4 weeks in a month. So $40 a month more. Would you let it fail for that?
No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't. Really, in our right minds, we shouldn't.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, sir. Thank you for indulging me.
Right. Now, just to get to my one basic question that I have for you. I noticed in keeping it in the context of your conversation. And this is for clarity, especially for me, because I wasn't aware of this. Does the Central Bank actually print our money? Is that money printed at the Central Bank?
It's not. The Central Bank uses a vendor in Canada.
Okay. Well, I just needed that clarification because the interpretation can easily be misconstrued that we print our own money internationally.
Yeah, but even the notion of printing money isn't really about printing the money per se.
Uh-huh.
It's about the notion is about essentially creating money out of thin air, right? Because even if we printed the money ourselves, the problem of printing your own money are just willy-nilly like that is that it comes with a price. You can't, there is no such thing as a price not being paid for simply just printing new money and putting it out there, right? Because remember, if I put money in your hands, you're going to spend it, right? So let me ask you a question. If I put more money in your hands to spend and the items you are trying to spend it on are in short supply because of your new spending, what's going to happen to the price of that item?
Well, that's why put it in the way how I imagined it. That is why I asked that question, because you don't have the money to match the liquidity to match the money that you're printing. Then that means that the money that you're printing has.
Well, it's not even, you're right, but it's not the liquidity. It's if you don't have the money to match the products and services that are going to be demanded by that money, the money's value is going to decrease because the price of things are going to be auctioned up.
Okay. And I think in a right about way, that is exactly what I was trying to get at.
It has no
value. But
you're welcome, man. All the best. Thanks a lot for calling. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after the news break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Let me wish you a happy early majority rule day, which will take place tomorrow. Before I go to majority rule, let me tell you why it makes sense for the government to agree to or NIB. Let me tell you why it makes sense. So, and why it makes sense for you, not just for the government, but a country, but it makes sense for an idea, but it makes sense for you. Right? So, if a rate increase is agreed, here's what's going to happen. You and I are going to have to pay more in NIB deductions. We will have to pay more if the government splits it this way. Maybe splits the rate increase between the employer and the employee. Don't pay the full NIB rate. The employer pays a portion, a higher portion, and you pay a lower portion. So if the government splits it, even if the government does it on the same proportionate basis, then you and I and the employers will have to pay more. What does that mean? That we will not have the option of not paying. So in other words, we will be forced to save money. Remember, this money isn't going to the consolidated fund so the government could use it. That's not where the money is going. This money is going into NIB's fund as a part of your savings, my savings. So it is going to force us, where we are not now doing it, maybe, to save more. And so that money that we now save is going to go in the NIB's fund. Now, at the lowest end, that might represent for NIB an annual income at the lowest level, maybe a little under 13 more million dollars. If I'm calculating it on the base of what NIB, what the salary stock is it's drawing from. And this is all crude. This could all be wrong. Millions of dollars going into NIB's fund. Some of that money, no doubt, will allow NIB to comfortably pay those whose pensions and other entitlements become due. But some of it will represent additional money NIB has to invest. Either way, you cannot lose. Why? Because the person who gets their pension funds are retirees. Retirees typically spend almost all of what they make. Well, if they are spending all of what they make, that's going into the economy, that's going to do some other things, you know, and so forth. So that's for you is economic buoyancy, right? Inclusive of people who might have a bit of other entitlements, like, you know, when you're pregnant, they give ladies that entitlement. I forgot the name of it. So all of that gets spent in the economy. All of it ain't gonna stay in the Bahamas, but, you know, a fair amount of it will stay in the Bahamas. So you don't lose on that basis. NIB, if NIB invests it, because they must invest the money so that they can earn rates of return to meet future obligations. Well, if they invest it, they may invest it in economically productive activities here in the country because they're obligated to do most of that here in the country. So you benefit from that point of view. Because increased savings is always better for an economy, better for a country, and better for the people of a country. So really, when we are kicking up and fussing up and saying, oh, we can't afford no more. What we are actually saying is, don't force me to save and do things in my best interest. Because if you had a private pension, what would your private pension be doing? It would be forcing you, or it would be helping you save money toward your... That's really the way it works. Now, here's the thing. It is true that additional money is being deducted from their pay, their wages, may be a strain for some people. There's no, at the lowest end of the economic bracket, there's no question that may well be the case. So what do you do in circumstances like that? Well, it's really not good to try to squeeze blood from the rock. But how about thinking about it in this way? Those people who strain the pay maybe something can be done if they can, by means testing, confirm that strain, right? In which you can maybe make an adjustment in their pay But you say, but how you make that up? Well, how about people who don't have that strain who say, you know what? I could do an extra $10 a week. And I'd love to plow that into my savings so that I get even more benefits later on in my life. So a younger person, a person with great, with much more income, maybe they get to voluntarily pay more into the fund, to buoy the fund, while at the same time, people who strain to pay into the fund might be have some adaptation made so that they are able to endure some of the challenges of an increased rate. How about that? In any event, trust me when I tell you, there is going to be an NIB rate increase. The longer we wait for that increase to be implemented, the more drastic that increase will be for all of us. Because believe you me, there is not one possibility on planet Earth that NIB, the NIB fund will be allowed to fail. All we are doing is delaying greater pain later on. We are not going to avoid. You can BPL now, or you could BPL later. You could BPL less now, or you could BPL more later. Because for sure as night follows day, the government of the Bahamas, be it the Davis administration or whatever administration exists after, even if it's the same Davis administration, there is no question NIB's rate is going up. So plan for it. You listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Listen, I'm your boy. I'm not going to try to fool you. I'm not going to try to lie to you. Look at your wages and figure on between 1% and 2.5% increase in your NIB deduction. Figure on it. I don't know when, but figure on it. You could take that to the bank. Okay. You can take that to the bank. Trust me, you will remember this statement. You say, Chivago told me it is 9 days into 2023. He said, look at your wages. So if your wages is 260, 270, 300, 400, 500, 600, whatever your wages is that is at or below the NIB ceiling, which I believe now is $600 maybe, whatever that is, figure on your salary deduction, your NIB deduction being between 4.9% and 6% at some point, not too far in the distant future. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
A pleasure. Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lang, I agree so much with what you say today because I remember back in the day when national insurance first started.
Mm-hmm.
When the whole country was raising hell, but this due tax coming on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But years later, Mr. Lang, when I retired, when I became 65 years old, and it was my time to leave the work scene, and you know you're not going out to have any employment anymore because you're over 65, you're going to 70. Unless you're an entrepreneur, got your own business going, it's very unlikely you can get another job. But when you be able to go every month and pick up that little thing, and you look at that.
Let me have that little thing.
And when you see that little thing, and it's over 500, 600, or whatever, it's a more a month. And you can buy yourself a little one or two Guinness and a little cigarette and a little extra on the side. Pay your light bill, your cable, and your water, and your grocery, and everything. Are good to go for another month.
You don't even remember that argument.
Yes, Mr. Lang. Let me tell you something. These people who are rowing now, because see, right now, they only contribute now.
Yeah.
And they can't get nothing now.
Yeah.
But when the day comes, Mr. Lang, and the man say, good evening, brother. This is your last paycheck. You're going home. And you look left, but you look right, and you don't know where the next dollar coming from. But the mom said, but you got national insurance coming.
No, but Sparky, what you got to tell them is tell them about how you just out of this check to make sure that didn't come.
You, but you know, Mr. Lang, what happened to a person like me? And a lot of people, a lot of business people, they gotta win over these stories. A lot of business people, and we'd be surprised who they are. They was taking money from people's paycheck, putting in their own bank account and saving to get interest off the money, but they were not making contributions to people's national insurance. And when a person like me retired, and I remember the different places I worked at, and money came out of my paycheck, and when I found out it was only X amount coming, I got the national insurance, and I said,
Your phone is bubbling, and it's been...
Okay, Mr. Lang, I went to national, I said, is this all I'm getting? They said, well, these are the places you work. I said, well, what about that place I work to, and the next place I work to? They say, we have no contributions from them places. Mr. Lang, if I tell you the names of the owners of those places and the names of those big establishments where I work that don't make any contributions, but they already sold their business out to other people and they took my money and gone, a lot of those entrepreneurs got away.
They should be in jail. Yeah, we gotta run, Sparky, because your phone is distorting a lot. So we thanks for calling, man. We appreciate it. As Tech says, real talk, Z. Man, I only can tell you the real stuff, man. I'm not gonna try to fool you. So you can plan around like if I were you, right? What I would do is just like start putting it away right now. So if you're paying, I you could check it yourself. I think it's 3.8%, right? So you add 1% to that, 1 percentage point to that, so now you can pay 4.8%. So the little 1 percentage point increase, like that calculation, if you have a problem with it, let me know. I can help you with that. Just put that away. It might be like $3 more, $4 more, $5 more, something. Go put it in the can. So you get used to it not being there, because it coming. And as Ingram used to say, we're coming tall and short and light to see. NIB, I have no panic about NIB failing. Chicago Line does not. I do not. It will not fail. It will not. And so the chairman... What is curious to me about the whole matter of the chairman of the board of NIB pleading with the government to urging the government is this. NIB is an institution of the state. Okay? It is an institution of the Bahamian state. It is an institution of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. It is therefore an institution of public policy. What do I mean by that? I mean, NIB is an organization through which the government of the Bahamas affects a public policy. What is that public policy? The public policy is national savings. Okay, pension entitlement toward burial benefits, toward maternity benefits and the like. Okay? That's the instrumentality the government uses to execute that policy. So NIB is a part of the governing machinery of the country in executing a particular policy. The board of NIB is appointed by the government. Hello? When the government changes, the administration decides who it wishes to be responsible for the strategic management of NIB. So you appoint such persons. Now, you would think that if you appointed me, I have your heir. Why? Because my responsibility is to execute the policies that you seek, and to give you advice and guidance on how to ensure that policy. Now, let me ask you a question. If NIB is a means by which the government affects public savings toward pension and retirement benefits and the like, if NIB fails, can that policy be executed any further? The answer is no. So if the board sees that an issue will undermine or undo a policy objective of the government, it would be derelict in its responsibility not to say to the government, you need to attend to this issue so as not to undo your own policy. In that circumstance, why would a chairman need to urge the government publicly about a matter such as this? This, to me, is a private conversation between the chairman and the prime minister. Says, listen, we have to, and they both agree on a time frame, and that's that. That's that. Or nothing happened, bro, and you accept that and move forward. And so I commend the chairman for the urging, because it is necessary. But I also wish to comfort the chairman. I really do, that maybe not his board, but a board will get that rate increase. And if it's not his board, the other board will have a harder decision to make than this board, because it will be a higher rate increase. And the chairman knows that. He knows that. I think, though, we need to take NIB's increases out of political hands. I really do. And by that, I mean this. NIB should either have legislatively introduced, because there are legislatively introduced reviews of the NIB fund. That's clear. That's why you have the report you have. But I think that the recommendation for the salvation of the fund, the maintenance and sustenance of the fund, should be a function of legislation also. So it should be a beyond debate. So once a duly constituted professor has been appointed to review NIB's fund, and if that group recommends adjustments to the rate within a certain range, the government should have the option not to dismiss the recommendation, but to carry it out somewhere within the range. So you might not choose the lowest end, you might not choose the highest end, you can choose somewhere in the middle, but you have to choose, and I think a time frame should be given to the government once that report has been submitted in which to carry out the recommendations of the report. That way, they can say, listen, well, you know, this is the law. Don't blame me, because that's what when you see politicians not wanting to increase the rate, it ain't have nothing to do with other than I don't want nobody to blame me for increasing their expenses. But me forcing you to save more is a good thing, even if you don't like it. And Sparky pointed this out by the fact that when NIB was initially introduced, it wasn't very popular, but look at it today. Force that savings. Make it a function of law. And take it, therefore, out of hands. So it sounds like another BPS situation. Suck my teeth. Yeah, there's another. Because think about it. If the fund is depleting and you keep allowing it to deplete, well, it means that you accumulate a deficit in the fund. Well, how do you accumulate a deficit? How do you get rid of or reduce a deficit that you've accumulated? You would have to do more later to restore the revenue than you had to do when the accumulated deficit was lower. So there is no question that every day goes by with no action on NIB, you are accumulating your pain for later, and the pain is going to come. And I don't even call it a real pain, because the truth of the matter is, I wish when I was younger, that there was a force saving plan beyond NIB in the Bahamas. I really do. So it might have felt like pain, but it really would have been prudence. Right? It would have felt like pain, but it would have been prudence. And many of Bahamians my age today, had that been the case, had we had a national savings program, a national savings scheme, many Bahamians today would be abundantly better off financially than they were and in preparation for retirement. And the economy of the Bahamas would have thrived more because that savings would have meant that more investment money was available in the pool for investing. So, there you have it. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Alang, your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with you back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Hello, I'm Simeon Hall. I grew up through a dead-end corner called Choke Neck Alley off Market Street. I dropped out of school in the fifth grade and worked as a carpenter's helper for Michael Pine Company. But it was while in the alley I discovered my life's calling was to preach the gospel. A Catholic classes inspired me when she told the class that we all were made in God's image. It's a long way from Choke Neck Alley to preaching throughout the Bahamas, the Caribbean, and all the inhabited continents of the world. The circumstances of your birth need not dictate what you can do or where you can go in this life. Young man, drop your gun. Find your life's highest purpose. Lift yourself from the gutters of crime. Your next crime might lead to your death, and loved ones will have to bury you. Eternity is just ahead. In which section will you spend it? Non-smoking or smoking? Heaven or hell? You are made in God's image. So this week, attend a church of your choice and reconnect with God.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
I'm not afraid. Stand, take a stand, everybody. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you make it down the same
road. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Alang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon, the day before majority rule day, a holiday, a public holiday in the Bahamas. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. She's feeling much better these days. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow, channel 6. I have a text here, Senator Lang. It is just pitiful to see chairs of public boards negotiating with government in the press. That. It's odd. Definitely odd. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Okay, we don't have a caller. Um, you may not know, and maybe you only vaguely heard, certainly I did not experience it myself directly, but I am fully aware that there was a time in the Bahamas when this country, prior to independence, prior to achieving independence, when it was still a part of the British Empire, still a colony of so-called Great Britain, that there was a time if the color of your skin was black, which I don't really know whose skin is ever black, but I know what the reference to black is. If you are dark skin or you had a darker hue than those regarded as white people, then there were certain things that were certainly off limit to you in the Bahamas. At that time, the country was governed by a group of people who were, insofar as the population is concerned, a minority group, meaning that that group of Caucasians, you could say, or white people, were about maybe 15% or so of the entire population of the Bahamas, but they were practically 100% of the governing machinery of the country. All the, what we would know now as cabinet ministers, they would have been there, you know, in governing council or committee or whatever. They would have been the equivalent there for, and they controlled the government of the day, not in an independent Bahamas, but an independent Bahamas, but in a colonized Bahamas. And what is the aim of an empire when it creates a colony? The aim of an empire when it creates a colony is to make of that colony a franchise of it, so that in every way it acts like, looks like that empire. It behaves like, talks like. So if it's the British Empire, it speaks English, you speak English. If it dresses a way and attire, you dress in a certain way and attire. It teaches you things that contribute to the longevity of its status as an empire, because it wants you to be subject to it and to do the things that is in its interest, not in yours. And so prior to independence, that was the circumstance of the country. And so a lot of our norms are norms that we have as a consequence of our colonizing by Britain. We speak English because God deemed it so. Well, I mean, you know, in the end, it was part of his plan, perhaps. But it was because we were colonized by the British. If we were colonized by the French, like the Haitians, we speak French or broken French or Creole. You know, like the Dutch, people speak that language, and the Portuguese, the people who were colonized by the Portuguese speak Portuguese, right? And so we dialect, but they have a dialect too. We just have a different dialect than them, but we speak English like them, right? And we dress like them. Look at our neckties and suits, and look at the speaker of the House of Assembly. Got a white earpiece of hair on, she's got, and so forth and so forth. Look at the judges and all these kinds of stuff. All of those are the trappings of our colonial past and heritage. So we talk about getting rid of the queen. Well, if you really want to get rid of your colonial past because the queen is a reminder of it, get rid of your new suit. There's nothing is a more daily reminder of your colonial past than the language you speak. Get rid of drinking that tea like you like to drink and dipping that bread in it. but this was our reality prior to independence, right? And prior to independence, black people could not occupy, could not attend, could not worship in some churches. Were not allowed to go to some banks, like the Royal Bank. Were not allowed to go to theaters. On base from our theaters, like the Savoy, wasn't allowed to go to certain places. you know, they just couldn't do it. You could wait in there. You couldn't go there. Couldn't attend certain schools like Queens College, Government High. Only so many people could do so. Privileged folk could do so. And the list goes on. In other words, we had a kind of apartheid system going on. We had a kind of Jim Crow scenario that went on in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We did. And all of the Bahamas were not accessible to all blacks. Certainly, the business and commercial establishments in the Bahamas were dominated by the white merchants of the Bahamas. Still a significant component of it now, but not to the degree it was back then. And so it was that over time, following the lead of other countries, Bahamas began to press for change in the country. You know, change, one could argue, may have started precipitating with the Burma Road riot. And, began to find leadership in the ranks of the Progressive Liberal Party, formed as it was by a group of white men, Cyril Stevenson, Henry Taylor, white Bahamians. But eventually William Cartwright, but eventually would find itself in the hands of a charismatic group of young leaders, led in particular by one Lyndon Oscar Penland, who without question became the kind of Moses of the Bahamas' liberation movement. He and Milo Butler and Clarence Bean and Randall Folks, Sammy Isaacs and others were once championing causes. Then there were women who were also joining the movement and joining the push for change in the Bahamas with the women's suffrage movement. And then we had the culminating event in Black Tuesday on April 27, 1965, where, that, as you famously know, Sir Lyndon threw the mace out the window, which the mace being the symbol of the Speaker's authority. Milo Butler threw the sand clock out the window. And there, the change began. And on January 10th, 1967, in a snap election that was called by the then United Bahamian Party, formed after the Progressive Liberal Party, the people of the Bahamas decided, insofar as ruling and governing the Bahamas is concerned, we will vote for in the majority for them that look like us in the majority. That's when a black majority government was installed in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. By the thinnest of margins, so let nobody fool you, this huge margin was a one-seat switch, as it was 18-18 seat. When Alvin Brannon broke the tie, and he was a white man, Randall Folks, also through his support in the direction of the Progressive Liberal Party, became Minister of Labor. Then the Progressive Liberal Party won the government. And the rest, as they say, is history. And it was debated for many years whether this majority rule day should be a national holiday. But in time, the PLP in office under Mr. Perry Gladstone Christie would in fact install it as such after advocacy by many and many, 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 including Fred Mitchell and Sebastian Campbell, Father Sebastian Campbell and others. And so that's how we arrive at this day. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Mr. Lang.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Yeah, boy, you take long to answer, but anyway, everything cool. Happy New Year, man.
Well, I took long to answer because I was in the middle of speaking of a very important subject about tomorrow.
Yeah, but I know you. I know you tell the people to call. So when people call, you'll be on. You know. So.
Man, you can take time to complain, or you can take time to share your views.
my view, you're talking about NIB.
Okay.
And I
all right.
Said
so you can go back. You can go back to it. No problem.
But what they have a problem with is that, you know, like for instance, NIB, somebody got the bank got $100 million from NIB.
Sorry, say that again.
Pardon me? Hello? Hello?
Bro, I don't know if it's me or you. I don't think it's me, but I can hardly hear you.
Okay, you can hear me now?
Try.
Okay. As I said, remember when NIB lent out $100 million to the Bank of Bahamas?
You might need to try and call back. Like, hang up and call back again. We'll take the call, but it's not working now. In fact, we'll take a break, and then probably on the way back, we can hear you better. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Gulang, your host. We're going to take a break, our final break. We'll be back.
Take a stand, everybody.
Loss of family members appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all.
Are you interested in the Bahamian economy? How about tips to improve your financial literacy? Tune into Guardian Radio's newest financial podcast series, C-File Talks. The podcast will provide listeners with their weekly dose of economic issues and solutions and the keys to financial freedom. C-File Talks will be hosted by an array of finance experts here to give honest and beneficial advice. You won't want to miss the C-File Talks podcast series, Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Hi Bahamas, it's Dr. Denothra Archer Cartwright from the Doctors Inn on Guardian Radio 96.9. Join me every Tuesday evening at 6:30 p.m. for our new showtime starting November 1st. For all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society, tune in at 6:30 p.m. Guardian 96.9, the Doctors Inn with me, Dr. Denothra Archer Cartwright.
Hi, this is Maddie Boom, your host of Blank Canvas, the home of visual art and culture in the Bahamas. Tune in to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risk, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation.
The Essentials with Hubert Edwards, Thursday nights live at 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9.
This is your host, Valentino Brand, inside the inner city. Join us as we continue to tell our stories, challenges, talk about the history, and share our hopes and dreams. Tune into Inside the Inner City on Fridays at 6:30 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. And remember, the place in which I fit will not exist until I make it.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z-Live. I'm Bahamas. I'm Shabara Lang, your host. I'm reading something. Really, your host, so glad that you could join us here today. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers, 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can text us at 422-4796, so you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I have a very interesting question here. This text says, Minister Lang, I have a question for you. You said that the election in 1967 was won by the thinnest of margins. You also said that the majority whites accounted for only 15% of the population. So if the election was a close race, does this mean that Black Bahamians voted UBP? Am I understanding you clearly? You are understanding me very clearly. Let me tell you what the results were in 1967, according to this Wikipedia page. According to this page, the United Bahamian Party got 19,408 votes. The Progressive Liberal Party got 18,452 votes. So according to this, the UBP got more votes from the Progressive Liberal Party. The UBP got 45.05% of the votes, and the Progressive Liberal Party got 42.83% of the votes. But the seats that those votes were spread among was spread 18-18 for the UBP and Progressive Liberal Party. The Labour Party, which is led by Sir Randall Folks, had just one seat. By Randall Folks had just obtained one seat, and an independent, the independent Cartwright, got one seat. So yes, and not only in 1967 did Blacks vote for the UBP. The UBP always won. However, they manipulated things at times. They always won with lots of white people, Black people voting for them. That's why they bought things for those to help bribe them, to encourage them to vote. They gave them stuff. They bought them liquor and stuff like that, as you heard Ross, Mr. Rokans, and so said. That's all part and parcel. So yes, Black people voted for the United Bahamian Party long time. There was significant supporters of the party. You'd be surprised to know some of the people who support the Progressive Liberal Party, for instance, and the Free National Movement today, their people were avid supporters of the United Bahamian Party. There's some Bahamians today, if you ask them, they'd go back and they'd vote for the UBP. So yes, the answer to your question is yes, Black people voted for the UBP. See, the UBP then was very influential, and they had friends, both in their white community and in the Black community. Some of them had genuinely authentic believers in their cause and supporters of them. Bahamians, Black Bahamians, who supported them. And who would tell you that today? Today. Huh? So, anyway, man. the Bahamas' governing philosophy changed drastically post majority rule day. Now, I'm not saying the Bahamas' governing philosophy changed altogether, because some of the but the ideological governing philosophy certainly changed. There was a shift from a token contribution to the development of the masses to a broad-based education and empowerment of the masses of Bahamian people, and an expanding of freedoms of Bahamians, particularly within the Black community. So the governing philosophy, ideology certainly changed. The cultural shift changed to an emphasis on the pride of the majority of people of color, and so forth. And so there was a shift in that direction. Now, and I say about the operating governing philosophy, the operating governing political philosophy, some of that continued, you know what I mean? The patronage continued, even though it shifted from one color to another color, but that continued too, that were not so wholesome altogether. So I don't want to sugarcoat the realities of what we came to embrace, but as a general statement, in a profound way, the Bahamas was changed and transformed by the shift in fortunes, in governing fortunes, post-majority rule. And I think those of us, those who live this world, this life, this in the Bahamas now, with all your complaints and all of your challenges and so forth and so forth, I think if you sat down with most Bahamians, I can't say all because I've heard Bahamians, Black Bahamians come on my show and talk about the fact that things were better off in the Bahamas under the UBB, as I heard that. So I can't say everybody. But I think if you spoke to most Bahamians who are older than I am, who've been around enough as conscious beings, pre- and post-majority rule, they would say that the country is night and day in terms of the way Black Bahamians live. And they were, for that reason alone, it made a difference to the quality of life to the vast majority of Bahamians. So I take this opportunity to thank posthumously those who were bishop, visionaries, operatives in that movement, whether they were white or Black, whether they were women or men, whether they were young or old, whether they were church people or non-church people, all of them, posthumously, and those who now still yet live, who were contributors to bringing about that change in the Bahamas and causing us to live a freer life, a more dignified life, a greater life of choice and empowerment in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And so as you celebrate Majority Rule Day, somewhere in your mind and heart, you could find to say your quiet thanks to God Almighty and to all those whose effort championed this cause. You know, wasn't it bloody revolution? Thank God. Sometimes bloody revolutions sound kind of sexy in their intensity, but I would much rather a quiet revolution than a bloody one. It wasn't the kind of vitriolic revolution that created intense hatred. It did create some bad sentiments for sure, lasting sentiments for sure. The issue of race in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas remains a subliminal in some ways, and that in other ways, maybe in some way, reality for Bahamians. And by overt, I mean the exclusionary conduct and or perhaps treatment of white Bahamians in all facets of Bahamian life. You know, maybe reflective of that overtness, and maybe their attitude, some of them toward us, even if you listen sometimes to the way some of them, not some of them speak, you can tell that there is still a kind of inequity that simmers in their consciousness about us and them, right? That's not widespread, but I sense it in some circles and some ways. But we are abundantly better off today, abundantly more empowered today, abundantly free of all of us today, black and white, white alike, because of that change. So I wish you all a very merry and happy majority rule day. Enjoy your holiday. Relax yourself with friends and family. And be thankful to Almighty God for all his blessings on us. You've been listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. God bless you. Of all of his spares life. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Have a great, great afternoon.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.